Hello again, everyone, and welcome back to my series, Nima Parvini versus Right-Wing Ideas. I'm Nima Parvini, and the right-wing idea I'm going to be talking about today is broadly what you might describe as technophobia, or rather a lamenting of what modern technology has done. Many right-wingers dislike the modern world, following critiques by traditionalists such as Julius Evola, or maybe they've read the works of Ted Kaczynski as an example, or even tragic German idealists or romantics like Oswald Spengler, whose Man and Technics, actually me rereading this book led me to make this entire series. It was the kind of spur. The issue, however, is that technology is seductive. It, you know, promotes convenience, has a logic of its own, and therefore forward-looking entrepreneurial types, the type 1 elites that Pareto talks about, consumer populations of all sorts, will always side with the new tech over the old tech. And it seems to me that there's simply no rightest answer to this. And in this video, I'm going to talk more about this basic issue. Before I get going, pick up a course at the Academic Agency. Promo code SHREDDER gets you 25% off. I'll play this ad, and when I come back, we're going to talk more about technology. It's promo code SHREDDER. World-class education denied to you by school, denied to you by woke university. Well, no more. Pick up your course today. 25% off all courses with promo code SHREDDER. That's SHREDDER. Buy it now. When I said that rightists have no real answer to this problem, we can go right back to the source. We can go right back to Spengler himself, whose basic argument in this book, Man and Technics, is that even though the West, European man, Faustian man, as he calls it, Europe and America, has had the advantage in technology up until now, it's only a matter of time before the so-called Third World, the Asiatic countries, the coloured peoples, as he calls them in this book, catch up. And that when they catch up, owing to various different factors, they're going to eventually take over. First, they'll take over industry, and then they'll eventually take over on the tech front. He also talks about, and this is a lovely, this is a beautiful book, by the way, Man and Technics, in terms of the way that Spengler writes. I've forgotten just quite how moving it is in parts. One of the things he talks about is the capacity of the machine basically to end up revolting on the master, i.e. the machines then are turned against the people who invented them, and they end up serving the machine rather than the machine serving them. Or even worse, you know, when foreign populations, coloured peoples, as Spengler calls them, the Third World, China, etc., get into a position where they have the advantage, then, you know, the consequences will follow. And when I say he has no answer, I'll just read his very famous last paragraph here. Another a beautiful passage, I'll say again, where he says, quote, "Faced with this destiny, there is only one world view that is worthy of us," and by us he means Europeans, "the aforementioned one of Achilles. Better a short life full of deeds and glory than a long and empty one. The danger is so great for every individual, every class, every people, that is, that it is pathetic to delude oneself. Time cannot be stopped. There is absolutely no way back. No wise renunciation to be made. Only dreamers believe in ways out. Optimism is cowardice. We are born in this time, and we must bravely follow the path to the destined end. There is no other way. Our duty is to hold on to the lost position, without hope, without rescue, to hold on like that Roman soldier whose bones were found in front of a door in Pompeii, who died because they forgot to relieve him when Vesuvius erupted. That is greatness. That is to have race. This honourable end is the one thing that cannot be taken from man. But as you heard there, Spengler actually believed that there was no way out. That the course that he plots in this book, the logic of technology and the logic of the way that labour markets work and the distribution of the populations around the globe, means that basically the fall of the West, eventually, due to technology and certain other factors, is inevitable. Remember, Spengler believed in cyclical history, as I discussed, as he discusses in Decline of the West, and as I discuss in my book, Prophets of Doom. So, Spengler didn't have an answer. Now, some writers attempt to come up with various forward-looking, futuristic answers. At the moment, there's this thing called Anglo-futurism, which to me seems like kind of Tom Harwood, line go up, you know, accept the extra runway in Heathrow and let us build luxury apartments or endless social housing on the Greenbelt style Toryism, disguised as something to appeal to the aesthetics of the online right. That's what Anglo-futurism seems like it is to me, although I haven't really looked into it. If you're wondering, by the way, the cigar today is a Partagas Mille Fleurs, and foolishly, I have forgotten my lighter. I've left it back at home. It's not here at the lodge. So for the first time, I'm using this little special match thing that was given to me by my good buddy Carl Benjamin. And look, he even got it engraved with Dr. Parvini on there. I don't know if you can see that, but wasn't that nice of Carl? And I'm going to see if it works. Let's see if it works. Speaking of man and technics, you know, Spengler talks about human technology as a tool. Well, this is a tool. Let's see if it does the job better than a modern lighter. Come on, let's see if it works. Ugh. I'm like the ape in Kubrick's, what's that film? 2001? Oh, I can't do it. Come on. I had it working just now. Let's see if it does it. Come on. Oh, no. Maybe I'll have to do like a 2 hours later. It's not going to bloody work, is it? Come on. Okay. All right. Okay, I'm going to have to be careful. Okay, so, where were we? Spengler. Technology. We saw an example of technology not quite working. Although I will say, in Carl's defence, it did work when I tried to use it last time. All right, so something like Anglo-futurism, that's clearly not really a rightist answer to the current predicament, because that is just coming from the Tory establishment. It is basically kind of status quo thinking right now. So, you know, it's not a rightist answer, because we know that the Tories aren't, you know, proper quote-unquote rightists. So, this is an issue. As per elite theory, the fundamental problem is mass and scale. If you go back to what I talked about in Populist Illusion, if you go back to what Sam Francis talks about in Leviathan and its enemies, the problem of the managerial state is a problem of mass and scale. And since mass and scale is locked in, that means some form of managerial state is locked in. The question becomes then, what has the right, as it stands, to offer in lieu of the state proposed by somebody like a Tony Blair? Now, the stance of simply resisting whatever it is that Tony Blair wants to bring in, I mean, recently it's been digital ID. I'm not up for digital ID either, by the way, as I've talked about. But at the moment, the right as it exists online, as the British right exists online, exists in this perpetual state of just kind of reacting to stuff that Tony Blair wants to do, whether it's through Labour's actions, which is ultimately downstream of Blair, or directly reacting to Blair himself, depending on who you watch. If you're reacting, you're losing. Remember, if you're reacting, you're losing. Tony Blair, interestingly, by the way, never responds, has never made a tweet, never engages in online discourse, completely ignores the conversation. And what is Blair's basic argument? What is his argument again and again? These new tech solutions, whether it's AI, digital surveillance technology, or ID, or whatever else he wants to bring in, but you know, medicinal innovations, and there's some. I mean, if you go on the Tony Blair Institute, it's all this stuff, this kind of techno future that he wants to bring in. He always kind of has reasons, practical, good, quote-unquote, reasons that business wants, that some of his donors, like Larry Ellison and Bill Gates, like, these are things that they want. Ultimately, they're things that somebody like Elon Musk wants. And his sell to the government is, this is going to kind of make things more efficient. This is going to make things better. The defensive posture against these tech proposals by the likes of Blair is defensive in nature. It's a defensive posture. And this will mean always losing in the long run. Whether, and again, the logic works in a similar way to the logic of what I was talking about with the ethno-narcissism stuff in the first video in this series. You know, the football club who doesn't scout around the world for the best players, okay, will lose out to the one that does do that. And in the same way, let's pretend that due to your defensive stance, you resist the Blair come in, right? Other nations, all it means is other nations who do adopt it then start to outcompete you. And this is, again, an argument that Blair makes again and again and again. If you don't do this, we're going to be left behind. If you don't do this, you're going to be outcompeted. If you don't do this, China's going to overtake you, blah, 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 blah. And in a weird way, the stance of Blair, which is whatever the latest thing is, we have to embrace it and run with it, get on the steam train, because if we don't do it, we're going to be left behind, it's actually the same conclusion that Spengler comes to at the end of his famous book here. Like, Blair is seeing it through, even if the task is hopeless. even if Britain is ultimately is going to be left behind, he's there, like the Roman centurion, right? You know, in Pompey, or in Pompeii. This is a weird thing. This is why I've said, like, the spirit of Blair is actually Faustian. And the rejection of it is non-Faustian in a strange way. Difficult issue, because it doesn't really have an answer. If you're just obstructing something that is quote-unquote inevitable due to the logic of where technology has brought us, and if everybody else is doing something and you're just a holdout, are you really stopping it, or are you just acting as a dam, right? A dam holding back the tide, and at some point the tide is going to burst and, you know, the dam breaks and the tide just pours forth. Historically, this is actually what has happened in Spain under Franco, right? Yes, Franco was there for a long time. He was able to hold it, but then the dam broke. Salazar in Portugal held it for a period, but then the dam broke in Portugal. Now, it's difficult to know whether they did the right thing by holding on, right, by being the dam, because they still got, what, like 50, 60 years held back the tide. And even they, in their later years, started to embrace the quote-unquote modern world, right? They started to come into the global community of markets and all this in the 1950s. Both of them did. So even they weren't, you know, started to kind of poke holes in the dam themselves. It's kind of a tough road. So, for instance, I've looked into a few studies on this, on what happens if you try to, like, resist new technologies coming in. And adoption rates of 60% of companies aiming for composable businesses by 2025 outpace competitors. So those companies that bring in the new tech quickly outpace competitors by 80% in deploying new features. Technophobia disregards elite-driven innovation as a real driver of power. Elites adopt technology to maintain dominance, as in the managerial technocracy, with technology adoption rates reaching 91% in organizations by 2023. So by 2023, your World Economic Forum Fourth Industrial Revolution plan had reached 91% penetration around the world. Technophobia, obviously, you know, you can make kind of progress-based arguments for, you know, like things like medicine, vaccines, etc., etc. And of course, as I talked about, the convenience factor is always the impossible thing to overcome. Even in the digital ID debate, where people are saying, I'm going to go to jail, blah, 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 rather than do this, and Nigel Farage is kind of talking about it now, when they actually start to bring it in and they start to make it convenient, I don't know, feels like a lot of the changes that have happened before now had resistance at the time, until it's normalized and starts to be like an everyday convenience. And that's the thing where they always get you, is on the convenience front. Um, 86.4% of businesses are planning digital platforms by 2027, right? So this is obviously where things are headed. And since it's where they're headed, the future envisioned by Blair starts to look, quote unquote, inevitable. And it's, I guess what I'm saying here is that strategy of simple resistance to this hasn't tended to work, and it's hard to see how it could work. Yeah. I wish I had better answers to this, but that's the whole reason why I'm doing this series. I don't think the right, as it is constituted right now, does have serious answers to these problems. And as long as it doesn't have serious answers to these problems, all that will happen is that ostensibly rightist governments come into power, like Trump, like Farage, etc., and they just end up doing what the Tony Blairs of the world want to do anyway, because, quote-unquote, that's the future. The problem is always, you can't stop everybody doing it. So you could stop your own nation doing it, but all the other nations do it. If they do it and gain an edge and outcompete you, then you have the problem where you're playing catch up, and nobody wants to be left behind. Now, I do understand, you know, a lot of the pushback on the first video was like, well, what's the point? What's that, like, winning for who? Winning for what? And I will come back to the Mearsheimer book, The Tragedy of Great Powers. The trouble is with these things is that they just like Manchester United becomes this kind of soulless entity unmoored from the actual people of Manchester. And, you know, corporations become unmoored from the actual people who started the companies. Like they stop becoming human, and they become more like the machine described by Spengler and take on their own life and their own logic. It does, from a human point of view, start to feel extremely pointless. Like, what is the point of any of it? And I'd agree with that. I don't think there is much of a point to it. But yet, you now have self-interested entities that seem to kind of work. They have their own unstoppable momentum. And, you know, serious rightists in the past, like Spengler, like Evelyn, saw this basic problem, but they didn't actually have an answer to it. They just say simply, look, you're going to have to live through this. You have to either ride the tiger through it, or you have to actually, like, just fight the losing position, as Spengler talked about there. And ultimately, all of these things come down, in the end, to national security and military matters. And of course, if you get left behind on the military front, then your enemies eventually can take you over. And that is the justification for the whole kind of field of competition that drives all of this. And it's all like a kind of perpetual keeping up with the Joneses. It's a keeping up with the Joneses. And, you know, viewed from a certain distance, it does, I would grant, feel rather pointless. It's like, well, for what for? Is it actually making anybody happier? Is it making anyone's lives better? Like, what is the point of a system like this? But in a way, this is what Spengler was talking about. That it will start to feel less human. It is more machine-like. It is existentially pointless. It is a kind of disenchanted, kind of godless, horrible dystopian future. This is the whole point of this book. This is what he talks about. And he also talks about how, in some future time, you know, some of the old things will come back. He talks about occultism coming back and Eastern religions coming back and paganism coming back. And in a way, these things have started to happen. But they are, in Spengler's view, the budding of the new spring over on the horizon, right? The first little peaks cracking through the snow in his worldview. But still, that might take a very long time to come. It may take, i.e., it could be another 100, 200, 300, 400 years. We don't know how long it's gonna take for all of this to play out. That's why he says optimism is cowardice. He saw what was coming. And I tell you what, if you read this book, which was written a long time ago now, almost 100 years ago, and you compare it to what has actually happened, it's kind of scary. And blackpilling as well. So, yeah. the whole point of this entire series is that I don't have, like, these are the issues that I don't have good answers to, and I don't think that the right typically provides good answers to. It has provided good critiques, or it recognizes the problem, but I don't see a lot of kind of persuasive, when I say persuasive, the answers that are provided are not going to work for the incentives of anybody actually ruling these massive structures. And as long as it remains the case that it's the revolution of mass and scale, the big managerial state, it's going to be really difficult to get any leader to say, right, well, I'm not going to recruit the players from around the world like Manchester United do. I'm just going to, like, invest in the youth club and have 100% homegrown players. Plus, rather than get the latest technology, I'm going to stick with, whatever has worked before. They're just never going to go for that, because the incentives are such that they're always going to go for the Tony Blair. So this is again part of the whole reason of doing this series. If anybody has any decent answers to this, let me know. The closest thing I've seen to actually starting to think creatively about this was, like, little hidden bits of Nintendo, as an, right, so this is like a weird example, but Nintendo for a long time really stubbornly resisted the drive towards standardization. Right, it always insisted on its own bespoke fittings and sockets and plugs and cartridges and things like that. And in a way, you could see, like, nobody could accuse Nintendo of being like a Luddite company or technophobic or something like that. They've always been innovative, but they kind of do it in a way that kind of feels traditional, something like this. I mean, maybe this is what Anglo-Futurism is actually about. I don't know. But i.e. these little pockets of bespoke, which then kind of somehow resist the homogenization. But a lot of people, even watching this, will be like, yeah, but it's a pain in the ass that it's just not the same USB socket as all the others. Right? It's just pain in the ass when it's, you know, when I have to have two different cables for my iPhone and my Android or whatever, you know what I mean? So in the end, even that feels inconvenient, and maybe the more convenient thing, just by the evolutionary logic, ends up working out. So, you know, again, you're on the side of picking the less optimal thing all the time. It's hard. I mean, it's what I'm saying is, it's very hard to persuade companies, nations, football clubs to choose the suboptimal thing, to choose line go down, to choose anything that isn't what they're already doing. I mean, maybe this is why some people say things like the only way is through. All right, I think I've talked for long enough. Maybe I'll leave that bit in where I try to light the cigar, and I'll see you next time. If you liked this video, be sure to like and subscribe. You can join the channel for thousands of hours of past shows in the archive and hundreds of videos. If you have any questions, you can leave a super chat or a super thanks, and I'll be sure to pick it up during my weekly office hours, which run every Tuesday afternoon. I also provide courses at the academic agency, which I encourage people to buy. Thousands of students now have taken the Trivium to improve their skills in writing, logic, and rhetoric. Just three of many courses available. Buy it now. But most importantly of all, friends, get out.